What more do you want from me?
I don't want peace. I want problems, always.
The hunt is on, and you're the prey.
Community is so emotional is because we are run by women. I've spoken about this at length, but hey, sometimes you got to replay the hits. When women control a society and a culture, it's going to automatically go to complete crap because women by nature are not built to be leaders. We can have good qualities, even qualities that are leader adjacent. But when it comes to shouldering the burden and the responsibility that comes with being a leader, not just having good ideas, not just being loud, not just being well-dressed, when it's time to actually put feet to pavement, when that rubber hits the road, are you able to shoulder the responsibility for the actions of the people that you have led? Because that is a real leader. And we know that women are not built like that. It's why we have entire swaths of women online who blame men for every problem that they have, blame society for every problem that they have, blame children for every problem that they have, blame the pharmaceutical companies and the agriculture and the FDA and all that for the reason why they're 300 plus pounds and all of these nonsensical things that people do, that women do. And we have just basically adopted all of that into the Black community.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another edition of Office Hours with Professor Carl Tone Jones. I am Professor Carl Tone Jones. And it's been a while since I've been able to drop one. Life has been lifing, but, you know, not a bad thing. But, you know, times we get busy out here. You know what I'm saying? But as y'all already know, y'all knew I was coming back. And now that I'm back and I caught y'all, y'all ain't going nowhere. So hold tight. Hold tight. And, you know, gentlemen.
Men of the West stand fierce and unyielding, holding the line today as our fathers did, with iron will and hearts of fire.
That's right. We're holding the line, gentlemen. And we're addressing a lot of craziness that's going on, man, in the community and the world, actually, you know. But before I get into that, let me let y'all know where y'all decide to pull up to, you know. Shout out to Fet Life Station on FetLifeStation.com. You were rocking live with your brother, Professor Carl Tone Jones, here with Office Hours. And, you know, we do this thing on Fridays because it's called Philly Fridays for a reason. You know what I'm saying? We take no prisoners. So what you're going to get on this particular episode is pretty much freestyle. So we doing it our way. And we're going to react and respond to some clips. Now, I know I have a very unique show. But this one, you know, normally I script my shows. I'm not going to hold y'all. But this time, you know, I just wanted to just flick and go through a few clips. The first one you heard was from a young lady. I think her name is Pretty J. Yeah, Pretty J. You can find her on, I got this clip off of Facebook, but I'm pretty sure she's on Instagram because that's Facebook and Instagram are the same company. So, you know, and I think she brings up a lot of pertinent issues because you think about a lot of the conversations that happen in a community that's not led by men, right? And these were her words, not mine. But it's not that I disagree with anything she said. because I've long stated that one of the biggest issues with women, and the majority of women, not all women, because there's some solid women out there, y'all. We can't pretend like it ain't. All right, there's some solid women out there that do a good job. They're smart, they're sharp, this, that, and the other. But unfortunately, many of the ones that rise to the top of their particular industry and become placed in a situation or area of leadership, they really crave the prestige that comes with it, the desk, the title. They really enjoy looking the part, right? But when it comes down to it, and I've often said this, real leaders are the ones who are accountable when things go wrong. Real leaders are when you make mistakes and own up to it. Miscalculations. Or, you know, identifying the negative outcomes of something that you led. And we go no further. You know, I mean, we can go to the city of Philadelphia, you know, when the mayor didn't want to be accountable for some of the issues concerning the union labor strikes, the labor union strike that took place last summer, when we had piles and mounds of garbage on piling up on the corners and on blocks throughout the city. There's also been a lot of other things, and you know, it was never her fault. She never said, hey, you know, I messed up this and the other. And be clear, not too many politicians do. So I'll give her that. Not too many politicians ever say, you know, it was my fault. I mean, goddamn, the president got us into probably the worst international conflict in American history. And while I'm not sure if he's fully aware of the things that I believe that I'm aware of, because, you know, I don't think he has the scale, the ability to have the scale and scope of thought to think outside the box to actually see what's going on globally and stuff before. He's created a major crisis, and president before him created another crisis in Ukraine. So, you know, there's like several major wars going on, not just two, it's several major wars going on right now throughout the world. And, you know, we got our eyes on the main ones because that's where the media is taking us. The war in Iraq with Israel and the United States. And yeah, I'm not letting Israel off the hook, because Israel is the reason why this shit is going on. They were at least the initiators of it. You had the pro-Israel lobby, the Zionist, and you know, and I hate when you give terms like that to people, because then it kind of like it, you know, when you give those terms to people, it kind of creates like an unreal aspect to it. Like you can call, like, I remember when people used to say Andrew Tate used to say we're in the Matrix. When you do that, it takes the onus and accountability off the people that are responsible for the predicaments that we're dealing with. So you got some rich, you got some billionaires who have all conspired in years past. And I've talked about this. I've written blogs about this, about, you know, they believe that they're actually, you know, global royalty. And they see all of us as worthless eaters, worthless units, worthless eaters, right? They're always participating in culling activities. And when you talk about culling, if you're not familiar with the term, it's what farmers typically do, say, if they have farm animals, you know, livestock that that have some form of deformity or is not as genetically strong as the one as some of the others, they will let that stream, they will actually kill those animals off so that they don't reproduce and produce weak offspring, you know. That was actually a term that was used here in America by the American Eugenics Society. in the early 1900s and 19-teens and 1920s. And that's where you get the woman, what's her name, Margaret Sanger, who was working in, you know, she was one of the agents for the Rockefeller Foundation. And she took care of the ABC League, was the American Birth Control League, and which later became Planned Parenthood. A lot of y'all don't understand like the genesis of this, but if you understand what the whole concept of eugenics is, you have to go back to Francis Galton of France, and who by the way was a distant cousin of Charles Darwin, who came up with the you know, the theory of evolution and so forth. And both of those people, both of them concluded that the darker your skin is the less likely, the less intelligent you are, the more prone to violence you are, and the less likely you are to produce intelligent offspring. So they were some of the engineers with that process. You got Cecil Rhodes in the Round Table. And, you know, it's crazy because a lot of people brag about being Rhodes scholars, not understanding who Cecil Rhodes was. Cecil Rhodes was Cecil Rhodes was one of the main organizers of what was then called the Illuminati. And that's what the Round Table was. And it was a round table of rich financial elites, you know, financially elite, because I don't think there's nothing elite about them. In fact, many of them are maniacs because they do a lot of inbreeding. But, you know, based on a lot of the things you learn about that particular culture and society, you understand that they believe that they are the dominant culture, that they're the ones who should make decisions for everybody else. And typically they do. And people fall in line. They were behind a lot of the mass genocides of the last 100 years. You know, you talk about the Maafa, the African genocide and the African slave trade. They were behind that. You want to talk about they financed it. You know, not the Rockefellers, but the Rothschilds. They financed the slave trade. They're the ones who loaned monies, you know, and created banks that were able to, you know, and they those banks used slaves as collateral. So many of y'all shop, many of y'all work with those banks today, swear by them. Wells Fargo was one of the biggest ones, you know. But many people swear by them. I ain't gonna say they don't understand. I think people just don't care. Because they, if not, you know, if you can't see how the tethering effect of all these things and how it's connected to you, then most people don't give a shit about it. Let's just be real with it. But I think another thing too that we need to identify is, along with those things and conspiracies, when you provide labels, like you call groups Illuminatis and things of that nature, which the Illuminati was a real creation. It was a real, you know, I won't call it an organization. It was a group of people who thought that they had the right to determine who lives and who dies. And so when I talk about culling, I'm going back to the culling now. They believe that people, just like farm animals, if you don't represent the dominant culture, that you should be killed off. And let me be clear about that. I was on top of this over 20 years ago. And I used to write a blog called The Rabbit Hole. And I would expose this. And it was funny because the majority of the people that actually read my blog were from overseas, particularly Eastern and Western Europe. Majority of the people that read my blog. And I was exposing a lot of things based on history. That, like, it's right in front of you. And as somebody who has two, you know, academic degrees in history and social studies, I had to learn how to do research before the internet. I had to actually go to libraries and look at microfiche, microfilms, periodicals, learn the Dewey Decimal System, research books to get firsthand and secondhand information. This is where you got all of your primary resources and secondary resources. So that's why I was able to do those things. And it kind of played a role in my evolution in terms of like just this process of life, like learning as you live, you know. So I'm a lifelong learner anyway. If you heard me over the last 20 years, you're like, wow, man, your thought process is you went from, you know, identifying conspiracies to becoming a Pan-African or a Black nationalist. And now we hear you talking about the conditions between Black men and Black women in the community and being an advocate for Black boys and Black men. And I'm going to tell you, that is an evolution of my process. But I'm just telling you that so you'll understand part of my journey. The more you learn, the more you know. That's a saying, but people can't identify with it. And so many people struggle with concepts that are sophisticated. My mind, my thought process is very sophisticated. So I'm saying that to say, like, so I'm gonna go back to the conspiracy bag for a second. These wars right now, these games that they're doing, playing games with the financial markets, manipulating the stock market, manipulating the price of oil, it's the dollar, the currency wars that's going on right now. This has the potential to shut the whole world down. We're about to see some global famine taking place, and specifically in places that they say the southern part of the world, right? And what they mean by that is they mean South America, Africa. That's what they're talking about. And those places that rely on imports, specifically food stocks and things of that nature, things to help them grow food, fertilizer, and so forth. A lot of those countries are not going to, in the grains, a lot of those countries are not going to do, are not going to have the things they need. And I know specifically in Africa, because Africa is still primarily under European colonization. I know a lot of Africans don't like to hear that shit, but you are as shit. Your African language ain't even your first language. You know, it's just what it is. So don't be mad at me. So a lot of times there were policies in parliament, laws and put in place that prohibited or proclivited those African countries from growing their own food. And you got to think about, like, what's the best environment on the planet, the best place to produce agriculture? It's Africa. Africa is the most resourceful place on the planet when it comes to resources, minerals, rare earth minerals. The topography allows for you to grow varieties of food. In Africa, you have mountains, you have dry areas, you have rivers, you know, you have the plains, you know, you have forests, you have all types of, and just the climate itself just produces, it's warm all year long. So unfortunately, they're not going to get what they need. And see, a lot of this stuff has been written, but we don't pay attention. Or we like to look at it as if these things, these monuments that they've created, that these monuments don't mean anything or carry any weight. Let me tell y'all something. If you go to New York City and you go to Wall Street, where they have the Merlin's Bull, people rub the whole bull is is varnished, right? Well, not varnished. It's I won't say calcified, but the only part of that bull that has its original color is the bull's balls. And people rub those balls, they kiss those balls, they take, I saw it in my own eyes. They kiss the balls. But that whole thing represents the down, like the taking down of black men in America. I mean, black men globally. Because specifically the Moors. That's why you say the running of the bulls in Spain. Is they were running the bulls out of Spain. They're talking about 1471 when they declared war, when they declared that they were going to that they were going to get rid of all the Moors that at once had ruled Spain and many other parts of Southern Europe. So it's symbology. You go to the bottom of Bowling Green, which is the street that Wall Street is on. Well, it's not the street. Wall Street is Wall Street. But the last, like Wall Street hits a dead end at Bowling Green, right? Bowling Green, you have the Native American History Museum. Now, it has the Native American History Museum, but it has 4 or 5 monuments outside the museum. And you've all seen this museum before. Because if you've ever watched the TV show Gotham, the police court, the headquarters, that's where they shot the film. I mean, they shot the series. I mean, they had phone booths and everything out there. I was messed up when I saw that. And then you learn the history. They have literally the history of 4 or 5 major kingdoms. Asia. I think you had China, Japan, the Americas. You had the British Empire. I think you had Spain represented. And then you had Africa. And all of them were basically queens, right? They were identified as the queens of these nations, the mothers of these nations. You know how people say Mother Russia and all this stuff and stuff. They consider their homes the motherland. Well, they had all these monuments out there for that. It's still there. And each one of these monuments, like the way they're designed, symbolizes like the true nature of their hierarchy in the world. So, you know, like they talk about the royal family, the Brits. So the British one is sitting with like treasures in the British Navy, because, you know, that was, the British Navy was actually considered the most dominant military force for a while. You had the different monuments. I think you might have had the London Bridge, all that stuff, surrounding this woman sitting in the throne with a crown on her head. But behind her was a cloaked figure, like a cloaked figure, whispering in her ear. And that was behind several of them. Then you had, and I'm just getting into it, the one for, I believe it was the one for, might have been Japan, either China or Japan, because it's been about a decade since I've been there. This one is sitting on the throne, but the bottom of the throne, the throne is mounted on a bunch of skulls. But I want to really talk about the one for Africa, right? Because they got the American one, and America one has like American monuments and things of that nature, Mount Rushmore and all that other shit on there. But the one for Africa is interesting, because the one for Africa is the only one where the woman has no crown. One of her breasts are exposed. She is like in a daze, leaning to the side, and there's also a hooded and cloaked figure behind her. And what does she have her hand on? She has her hand on the head of a sleeping lion as the lion is asleep on her lap. Now, I'm going to let y'all do what you will with that imagery. And feel free to go check it out. Go look it up. You can find it. You know, you can do a quick search. You know, whatever your search engine is. You do a quick search. You know, ask your AI agent to help you sort it out. And to try to describe what each one of those, which one of those monuments mean. And that's on the Native American Museum. You go across from the Native American Museum into what's called Battery Park. Played a significant role in the American Revolutionary War, right? and prior to, in Battery Park, there are literally monuments where it's talked about how the Dutch stole New York City from the natives that were up there. On a monument, you come down here in Philadelphia. And you see, what's the name of that? It's a building right off the Delaware River, right? Where it's a park. But it's a historical park. And in that historical park, there's the monument of Turtle Island. They considered them, you know, America was considered Turtle Island. So it was a monument there. And one of the monuments there that speaks to Turtle Island also speaks to the fact that, you know, it speaks to the conquering of these lands. I mean, if you know the story of William Penn and how Philadelphia was created, there's a lot of shit that's written. William Penn sits on the top of City Hall in Philadelphia at Broad and Market, and he's pointing at something. For years, people was like trying to figure out, what is he pointing to? And if you pay it, and if you look down, because he's pointing, he's pointing at the Masonic Hall, located right across the street. And this whole city was built like the country. All the major cities on the East Coast, especially when they were found in this country, they were built by Masons. See what I'm going at with this? So I didn't, you know, and so I talk about that because there was a monument in, I believe it was Athens, Georgia, if I'm not mistaken, called the Georgia Guidestones, where in 8 different languages, they had these stones that were chiseled with 10 commandments. One of them was stating that they were going to end all, they were going to end global sovereignty and create a one world government. That they were going to, I believe it spoke something about like a one world religion. And then another one, the one that we should be really worried about, is to maintain the population of humanity to 500,000 people in perpetual balance with nature. Somebody recently blew that monument up. A few years ago, I don't know how they got in there because shit is covered with cameras. There was a rumor, because you know when you try to find the origins of like who created that monument and so forth. It was an anagram of a name, so. But basically, it was speaking to the Rosicrucians, which is, if you ever see the cross with 2 lines in it, so it's not just the, you know, up and then cross, it has 2 lines in it. That's Rosicrucians, and they are a different sect, you know what I'm saying, of Christianity. So I'm giving y'all all this. I don't have time to get into who they are. Y'all got to look this up. Do your own research. All right? So, I'm giving y'all this, you know, this game real quick because it speaks to the fact that these wars are going on are major league dog and pony shows. I mean, for the people, the countries that are involved in these wars, it's an existential situation. Their survival depends on their fighting the power structures that they're going up against. But the global impact of these wars and the people who have financial interest in keeping these wars going on, and other interests in keeping these wars going on, the money behind it, they, you know, all these things are becoming unveiled right now. All these things, the names, we're not just calling them Illuminati's no more. We're not just calling them Zionists no more. No, there are names attached to this. Right? There are names attached to this on newspapers, publications. Some of them on Israeli publications, calling out the Israeli lobby, AIPAC. This is stuff nobody did before. And shout out to the college students who put it to the forefront, who are protesting on all those different campuses for the last couple of years, considering the genocide that's taking place in Palestine, you know, and then in the West Bank and in Gaza over there. Because they're the one, they're the real primary reason why, you know, the most open secret was being covered up by international media and the governments of the world. And America's just as guilty, because Israel wouldn't be able to do anything if America wasn't funding it and providing it with weapons of mass destruction. Same thing they claim Saddam Hussein had. This shit is crazy. But I go back to the Georgia Guidestones. I'm talking about the Bilderbergers, the Georgia Guidestones. Just to talk about the fact that this whole, you know, depopulation program, Bill Gates talked about it, but people pretend like they didn't hear him actually talk about it. When you're talking about reducing the carbon footprint of people, and that vaccines would be the answer. And who was the number one proponent of giving out the vaccine during the coronavirus? Who? Globally. And then recently, it was discovered, and there's been news reports, that the actual vaccine has actually killed more people than the virus. Yeah. But you know, when we hear things that don't encourage us, and we get, or things that make us feel uncomfortable, we've done what most people do. We look for a diversion so we don't have to pay it no mind. It's like hiding from a killer, and you close your eyes and pretend like by you closing your eyes, they can't see you. We've adapted that mentality. So when I talk about like my evolution and how I got to here, it's because I've seen the downfall, consistent downfall, the steady downfall of the black community. And in observing the downfall and the consistent downfall of the black community, the one thing I've recognized is what this young lady spoke about earlier. Because as black people, like, we're dealing with they spoke about the global reset. We just, yeah, they have the global reset. Didn't know what the fuck they was talking about. But our reset has to be to actually assume some power and not just be comfortable with having proximity to it. Every other group is fighting for their own. And when you have black people, specifically those goddamn Democrats and all the people who are left-leaning, they have made it the culture of politics to talk about everything affecting the world except for the black community. Black people learned that Hillary Clinton, when she came to the convention in Philadelphia back in 2016, was it 2015 when she was running for governor, running for president, they told her don't answer any questions that pertain to any issues concerning black people. And black people were still mad, and, you know, particularly black women were mad that she lost the fucking election. And I know a bunch of you clowns, but yeah, but look who we had in there now. I mean, we always talk about the least of two evils or the lesser of two evils. But they're all evil. All your choices are evil unless you do for self. So in seeing that, I realized the only way to save the community was to identify the one place in the community that's been weaponed, well, that's been warred against and targeted since the inception of the African slave trade here in America. The neocolonial transactional slave trade, the trans-African slave trade. And that's black men, black boys. And the reason you see so many black women as leaders in our community is because many have willingly stepped into a void and are gatekeepers of power positions when it comes to making decisions that deal with the proliferation of the community. And then we wonder why the community's in shambles. And it's not to say women can't lead. I'm not going to say women can't lead. The ones that have been in charge shouldn't lead. And it's like this, right? When you talk about a man, and this is just across the board, when a man gets resources, he shares it with him, he gets the resources to share with his family, right? To make sure that he can be dependable. He can have dependence. The nature of women is when they get resources, they hoard them for themselves. This is why when I hear women talk about, hold on, one that talks like this, hold up. Where's that? Now her silly ass. Let's see. Hold on, it's coming. When I hear one that talks like this, I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Check this out.
The next time somebody asks me why I'm single, I'm just going to respond because I have a house by myself in my name, 3,000 square feet with an attached garage, a car inside of said garage. And then on the outside of my house, white picket fence inside of my house. Everything on the inside is brand new, including the water heater, dishwasher. Everything was put in brand new when I moved in. My bathroom, jetted tub, my closet, hers and hers. There's no his. Hers and hers vanity. My baby girl has her own room, her own bathroom. And then I have an extra bedroom that I utilize for my in-home office. Living room, I have two of those. Sitting room, one in the bedroom. I got space and I don't know what to do with it. We have a dining room. My floors, 15 feet, 22 feet in some places. And I don't need a man to accompany me to be able to keep up with it. $2,500 on the mortgage. It's actually $2,517.22. I pay my own loans. When it comes to my vehicle, my house, everything is taken care of by me. And when my baby says that she don't want to see no more ads on Disney Plus, guess who upped it? Me. And when them taxes is due for my car and for my home, who pays it? Me. Every 6 months for the house, every year for the car. When my baby needs clothes because she's outgrowing everything at the speed of fucking lightning, who's covering that? In my household, me. I'm doing all of this shit over here by myself. My fridge, not one, I have two. Both are full. We got one fridge is dedicated for drinks and that freezer is meats alone. Where you see that at? Not no average bitch, because I came from poverty. Okay, so the next time you ask me why I'm single is because I'm doing it by myself. Why would I let somebody come into this space when I've already curated it to be perfection? Unless you want to come in and you want to take on everything that I'm doing and let me do nothing, I don't need you here.
So, and then shout out to Anton Daniels. I was going to let him speak, but I need to rip this right away. He's the one. He's reacting to this video. That last part. Now, you heard her whole monologue was about being single and independent and self-sufficient, basically, an adult. But she said the only way she would deal with a man is if he came in and took over all that other stuff. Not if they partnered up, not if they divided the duties. But he would have to take over that so she could do nothing. That's what we're talking about when we say you put the wrong people in leadership positions. They're more concerned about buttering their own biscuits and buns and bread And so, and this is why I don't like, you know, and I tell you fellas all the time, don't buy into that whole six-figure deal shit that you need to make six figures. Those rules are only for dudes they don't like. They make rules for guys they don't like. They break rules for all the guys they do. But I think one of the biggest takeaways from this is it just goes to show that when you put, like, you put that woman in charge, let's say she was running the city, she would pat her own pockets. And you've seen all the, look at all the female mayors around the country. And look at the scandals that's going on in their, in their offices and all the people they're connected with. Sleeping with the head of security, one up in Illinois. She was doing so much wild shit. And, you know, she literally had, she was covering up for cats that was sexually accused of sexually assaulting people in other cities. She was using the taxpayers' dollars to go on all expense vacations and shit. All expense paid vacations. I mean, it was wild. Even had a woman shot at, allegedly. And so, you know, you know, and then not accountable. It's nothing. None of this shit was her fault. The town budget went to hell. The town went from having a surplus to being like $6 to $8 million in debt. Which for that small town, I think it was called Dalton, up in the Southland of Chicago, as she would always call it. Nasty work. I think she started a podcast after her shit fest, after they decided not to reelect her. But it was just another sign. And I'm not saying that you got guys out here that don't do it. I mean, hell, all you hear about is how Trump and his people is getting rich off these wars over there because they're manipulating the markets. They're trying to buy up land over there because in those war-torn countries, land is cheap. Shit. Trump's, Secretary of War, Peter Hegstaff, him and Melania Trump got in trouble for trying to buy some land and property over there in the Mediterranean area. And they ended up, the people of that country were mad as shit. They were mad. Yo, they firebombed the prime minister's house. This is, I'm trying to tell y'all, man. They this shit is wild and out of control. And y'all would notice if y'all paid attention to more than just bullshit in terms of like the global, like the media. The local media, with the sanitized media, the corrupt media. You know, listen to your bruh. I got you. You know what I'm saying? But I'm gonna try to check something else out too, right? Hold on, where is it at? Listen to this baby bop bimbo babble right here.
All
right,
this or that. Would y'all rather be in a relationship or single?
Relationship. Relationship if it's beneficial.
Right. If the nigga's doing it right, relationship for sure. At this stage and age, I'm not choosing to be in a relationship unless it makes sense, unless I'm happy. I would rather stay single than to be in an unhappy relationship. We really just want to be girls. Who wants to go at life alone? Like, I just miss being somebody's baby. I just miss being...
Am I your baby? I wish I...
My own responsibility. I can be my own responsibility, but I don't want to.
Trust me, I've been doing this shit a long time.
And I don't want to.
Okay. Like, that's what I'm saying. With it.
But you can, girl. Push it. Give it all
emotionally,
you got.
Though. I want to go home and cry to my nigga and be like, can you believe this nigga play with me?
And that's the thing about being single. Like, I done vented to my sisters before. Everybody has somebody.
I swear, that'd be me.
To go home after a long ass 13-hour shift,
nobody,
you don't got
me.
Nobody to talk to about, Karen, have you fucked up?
That's my favorite thing to say. Like, I'd be like,
her wig is so fucked up and she got a man. Like, somebody loves her. Or she's slow as hell and she got a man. Why can't I find love? Like, what is it?
Because a lot of these motherfuckers is unhappy.
Cool. Granted. But listen.
And I don't want to be unhappy. But and that's the thing. We're not about to be in a relationship.
Yeah. See what I mean? But these are the same ones talking about we're all the good men. And this is why brothers are wisened up, man. And brothers, yo, the black community is in trouble. All of America is in trouble. Nobody's in worse shape than white America. The average age of white people in this country is in like the late 50s. That means that the baby boomers are carrying. And early Gen Xers are carrying the population of white folk. When they die off, the population is going to drop dramatically because they're not producing any babies. This is why they push so hard for those anti-abortion laws. They understand that they were about to be dethroned population-wise in this country. This is why. But you got to understand it. There's more. Hold tight. Hold on. I got more. Listen to this. This is check this shit out. Hold up.
Students at Tuskegee are starting classes with a new and controversial dress code. No longer can they show up to class or the cafeteria wearing bonnets or do-rags. The university says the policy is about preparing students for the real world, but critics say it's more like respectability politics with a student handbook. So how did we get here? Well, let's start with the history. For centuries, head coverings have run deep in the diaspora. In pre-colonial West Africa, they were symbols of status and wealth. By the time Africans were captured and enslaved in the Americas, they were forced to wear head coverings as a means of oppression. In some cases, they used the folds in their headscarves to communicate coded messages to one another that their enslavers couldn't understand. Over time, the uses have evolved, but the trauma has lingered. Black people wear head coverings for hair care, protection, fashion, and faith. But to some, they're still not considered presentable, especially in public. It's important to note we haven't been the only ones wearing them. Many historians point out that bonnets were common in 18th century Europe and New England as daily accessories and sources of warmth. And today, we see white women wearing them at the airport. The same goes for do-rags. We've seen them everywhere, from rap videos to red carpets, and yes, on white folks' heads. Black people have deemed them appropriate for the culture, but we know the culture isn't always considered appropriate for every day. Which brings us back to Tuskegee. Supporters of the policy say HBCUs have a long history of preparing students to navigate professional spaces that haven't always been fair to black people. But is it time to give that ideology an upgrade? Especially when there's no data showing that a bonnet or a do-rag determines grade point average. For generations, we've shown up overdressed, overqualified, and over-credentialed. And don't get it twisted, that's something that we should always take pride in. But regardless of how we show up, we're still facing discrimination. DEI policies are still being undone, and HBCUs are still historically underfunded. So is the obstacle really the bonnet, or is it the bias? Is Tuskegee teaching students how to succeed in the world as it exists today, or to accommodate standards that should have changed a long time ago? Let us know in the comments, and whatever side you're on. Let's not pretend a bonnet is the biggest threat facing higher ed when group projects still exist.
Yeah, this is absolute trash.
Me personally, I wouldn't take this level of disrespect.
Why do topics like this carry the headlines in black communities and on social spaces? Why? Do you understand how wild it is that people will fight to maintain their ratchet standards? Like this shit, like that when, because I'm gonna tell y'all can't see the video. But we've shown videos of all these other groups and people, even African women, that were wearing head coverings, not bonnets, head coverings. A lot of those women wore it because it protected their head from the elements, not because they just didn't feel like doing their goddamn hair. And then not to mention that Tuskegee wasn't only just talking about the head wraps, like the do-rags and the bonnets. They were also talking about wearing pajamas to class. And the many of the arguments was, well, white institutions do it. And I'm like, well, everything they do, we should be doing too. But what if all white people decide to jump off a bridge? Are we following suit? So this is some of the most disparaging shit, because she tries to sound, you know, educated, intellectual. And when you, I realize when you speak with authority, and they learned this through the Milgram experiments after the Nuremberg trials, when they put all the Nazis on trial for war crimes, and they asked them why did they perform the duties knowing that they were harming people, and they said we were just following orders. But the Milgram experiment showed that to be true, that when people think they're talking to somebody in authority, they just go along. 80% of the population will just go along. So it's just stupid shit like this that gets under my skin. With all the problems black people have in the world, we cherry pick the most minute, most ignorant shit to dominate the headlines in regards to what should take priority and what should be a crisis. It's just so embarrassing at this point. This is why globally we're not taken seriously. And this speaks to the lack of leadership. Leadership is leading us to say that, you know, we need to be protesting fucking bonnets and do-rags. Or for bonnets and do-rags. This shit is insane. It's insane. And so, you know, and I had a few things I was going to go to, you know, for this joint. But I think one of the major precogs in terms of like dealing with a lot of the stuff that, you know, well, hold on. Let me let y'all check this out real quick. Oh, wait, did we already check this out? No, we started off with this one. So, yeah, we did. So, but there's some things that we need to deal with in terms of like, overall, just understanding, like the attack on black men, right? So, check this joint out real quick, because this, all these things are really jabs at brothers, and this is one of the reasons why brothers have consistently.
Lika Andrews, I get it. Pandering to a certain audience and recycling rhetoric about black men gets you attention. It's likely one of the reasons you still have a job, but black fathers should not have to be collateral damage for your commentary, sis. You see, Malika, I spent 6 years of my life doing research and took on over $100,000 of student loan debt to earn a PhD just to tell the world something you already knew, that black fathers matter. And this ain't no pick-me situation, Malika. The data is clear. Black fathers are here. Black fathers are involved. And their perspectives matter, and their voices need to be amplified. But there are people like you, Malika Andrews, who continue to perpetuate stereotypes and pathologies around black fatherhood, who would have you look at a league full of black men and somehow believe black fathers don't exist. James Jordan raised Michael Jordan, Del Curry raised Steph Curry, LaVar Ball raised Lonzo and LaMelo Ball, Rick Brunson raised Jalen Brunson, Nixon 5, and the list goes on. The list goes on and on and on. It's fair to say that there is no NBA the way we know it today without the presence of black fathers, Malika. But there are people like you, Malika Andrews, who would have you thinking these men got here through immaculate conception. Like, the store just dropped black boys off at fatherless households, and somehow they became extraordinarily men and athletes by themselves. You see, Malika, black fathers are raising children. They're coaching, they're teaching, they're providing, they're showing up, and yes, they are changing diapers. And as a mom of five, I can tell you this much. You can't change diapers if you're an invisible daddy, Malika. So, my research tells a different story, Malika. The data tells a different story. And most importantly, black fathers will tell you a different story. You said you want to be accurate and fair. So, Malika Andrews, please stop perpetuating stereotypes and false pathologies about fathers who happen to be black. It is harmful, It is toxic, it is tired, and much like you, it is whack. Malika and
The war. The war is insane. The war is insane on brothers. This is why I became an advocate for black men. Because until recently, there's been a dearth of people actually standing tall for brothers. You know, so I decided to throw my hat in the ring. Plus, let's be clear about something else. I still identify as a black nationalist, right? Still codify black nationalist. But the only way to save the community is to save the men. The women have been prompted up for decades. And the community is taking steps backwards every year. Look at all the cities. Look at all the places that are run by the gynocracy. And you will see a declining society that's left to rot while she looks fly in her business suit. While her hair is done and she's cool for photo ops, the makeup is all tight. Those wigs be sliding to the side. You know, shout out to, what's the chick name? Something Crockett. Shout out to her. She got Stephen A. Smith in trouble. I'm going to talk about that next week. But, yo, we really do have to get our shit together, man. And I'm tired of certain dumb shit. But that's why I got this young sister right here that's going to take us home. This sister, and she got her name Tatted Tiger. Beautiful chocolate sister. I'm talking about when you listen to her talk, you melt her, you melt her arms. So I want y'all to listen to her as we sign off, all right?
Some of y'all think I don't like women. That's not true. I don't have a problem with women. I have a problem with the things that women do. Hear me out. There was this couple that was arguing, and every time the man took a step back, the woman would take a step forward. Every time he tried to defuse the situation, she would escalate it. At one point, she cocked her fist back and tried to punch him in the face repeatedly. Not once did that man raise his hand to that woman. Not once. Eventually, he told her to get out of his face because he was frustrated. Her response, "What you gonna do, hit me?" "I'm sorry, what?" That man was walking away from you and you followed him. Now, ladies, let's be real for a second. How many men are sitting in jail right now because a woman bent the truth and told a lie? It's 2026 and some of y'all still won't admit that shit. And let me hit y'all where it hurt. Keep your hands to yourself. Domestic violence is never okay. But we don't speak about the men that got locked up. Not because he hit first. It's because he hit back. Just because you are a woman, that does not give you the right to slap, punch, or kick a man because he's getting on your nerves. That's some shit that five-year-olds do. It's not that I'm defending a man. I'm just not defending our behavior. As women, and I'm including myself in this because I'm not above y'all, I hate what we have become because we're better than that. Most women will pick up a bottle before they pick up a book. There are 40-year-old women trying to be baddies instead of trying to be better. Why? Some of y'all are so easy to sleep with that a man won't even look in my direction because he know he not getting no ass. That's y'all fault. A man can't be a hoe unless he got somebody to be a hoe with. So if he's giving it out, that means somebody laying on their back. Women today are not like the women in the 90s. Look at the women today. These are the women that our young children have as role models. Women using men for their money, sleeping with men to get what they want, calling themselves baddies and bosses. Your young daughters are looking up to them. That's not okay with me. Young Miami made a song called Spin That. There are children four and up who know every single word to that song, but they cannot do their homework. Y'all need to spend y'all ass in the house and spend more time with y'all kids so they can spend more time in their books. I'm just saying. We don't need more baddies. We need more nurses. We need more scientists. We need more mothers. I know some of y'all out in the world. It's time to come back home. I know.
And with that, I'm signing off. So thank you for pulling up. And as I always say, take care of yourselves. You know, pray all is well with you and your families and friends. And remember, family, remember, war and peace. Because if you want peace, you better be willing to wage war for it. And with that, I am out of here.